Welcome, everybody, to formerly the All Access USL podcast and what you can now call the USL Way podcast. It's something that has been in the works for quite some time. I wanted to make something more professional, something more clean. I was talking with Noah, of course, from MBFC Discussion, and we wanted to move in a different direction, or at least me. I wanted to move in a different direction in terms of making this a more well-put-together podcast, just in terms of content, in terms of episodes. And I was finally able to do that. I was finally able to get my wits about me and make it happen. So I'm very pleased. It rolled out this past week. I took, of course, a little bit of time off of content just to get it right. And I think I got it mostly right. There will be some changes along the way, or at least going forward from now, from when this episode comes out. There will still be some changes. For what to expect for the socials, of course, there's only the two socials. So it's not going to be crazy. Instagram, I think, I will still, of course, post on there. But that will be more big news. That's what I've wanted to do this whole time, is for Instagram to be not exactly where I do my main stuff. I want it to be Twitter, for the most part, where I do my main stuff, main analysis, main talk on transfers. But of course, Instagram is still going to get a lot of love for people who primarily use Instagram. I'm not the biggest fan of Twitter, specifically based off of, I'm sure a lot of you can guess, the ownership. It's pretty bad. But in terms of growing the podcast, in terms of what I want to do with it, that seems to be the best place for me. And it's just the easiest in terms of how I want to cover the league. Instagram, like I said, of course, is still a place that I will be active. But Twitter for right now is going to be the main focus of getting stuff that I want out. And I also just want to say a big thank you, guys. I did not cover this recently, or when it happened, I should say, but a while ago we hit about 3,000 listens, and after 55-ish episodes, that is huge. Honestly, never something that I thought I would see with this podcast. This podcast was always going to be it felt like it was just going to be something I did like in my spare time, something I did for fun, and now it's actually like, so it's something I have been enjoying doing a lot more recently. And it feels like we're building a bit of a community here. And I'm so pleased with that. The opportunities I've been able to do by going to games, getting to speak with coaches, other players from USL Championship teams, and getting to interact with people who also run other pages. You know, of course, Noah from MBFC Discussion. He's been here for the longest time. PJ Davids from Queensborough, who kind of kickstarted everything. He was my first interview. That was huge. I enjoyed that so much. And then, of course, everybody else I've talked with since. It's been an absolute pleasure to do that, and I look forward to doing that more. Last thing going forward for the podcast, it is going to still stay strictly USL Championship. I am not the biggest... Once USL League One expands a bit more, because it looks like with their expansion going forward, there's still a little bit of hesitancy from the Santa Barbara Sky on whether or not they will be a franchise. There has been no talk on them for the longest time. And their inaugural season has come and gone, and they have not announced anything. So unfortunately, it looks like that might be a lost cause. But should everything go right besides them, it looks like they'll be hitting around 17, 18 teams come around 2025, 2026, which is huge. So maybe around that time, that could be a opportunity for me to get into the USL League One space. USL League Two might take some more time as well. I don't know if I will get there in a timely manner. I do. I like covering it. I, of course, talked to the Peoria City head coach a while ago. That was a great discussion. I really enjoyed that. I hope to get more USL League 2 in terms of interviews. Of course, I would love to interview those players and coaches and staff and all that. But in terms of covering those leagues, that's just not something that I want to be doing right now. I want to focus on the USL Championship completely going forward. So that's a little rundown of how things have been going, how things will be going. I'm glad you guys have stuck around with me during this little transitional period these past 2 months of trying to get this all together. It's been a challenge trying to get everything together the way I wanted it to be. But we're finally here. I'm also pleased to announce that with this comes a actual episode schedule. You can expect episodes to come out every Tuesday morning from now on. There might be a bit of news going forward as well in terms of how you can get more access to, because I want to get back into doing player interviews, coach interviews, and just discussions with them in general. Not necessarily interviews, just talking with them and getting their insight on the USL leagues. That will be coming in the future as well, maybe in about the next 2 to 3 weeks. I hope to be getting back on that and going, or at least talking about how we can, or how that's going to look going forward. With that being said, that's really all I have on that. It's so good to be back. I can't even imagine. It's just been great. It's been great. Like I said, I've been so happy doing this recently. I'm smiling over here. I have a good setup now. It feels more like I said, like a professional thing that I've been putting out and creating. And it also goes out to Noah, again, from MBFC Discussion. He's been huge in pushing this podcast forward and helping get it where we want it to be. He will be back. Don't get me wrong. He will be back in due time. And I also will be, of course, I have reached out to a couple other pages to get more variety in terms of who we talk about, because he brings, of course, a more Monterey Bay based view than some other teams. But so far I've got a Rhode Island supporter on board to come on for an episode or two. That'll be fun. And hopefully in the future as well, I will be reaching out to Orange County and Loudoun United, because especially Loudoun United and Rhode Island, those are two very interesting teams headed into this season. So that'll be out fairly soon, those episodes are talking with them. But some interesting news. We're gonna jump into the USL Championship. We'll jump into our talk now. I'm sure you guys have seen, of course, there is a new team in Connecticut joining MLS Next Pro. And part of why I wanted to also get this going in a new direction is I feel like I owed more to the USL Championship. And seeing MLS Next Pro make these kinds of moves can be difficult as a USL fan. When you see MLS Next Pro get a team in Connecticut, when we already have Hartford over there, when we already have Rhode Island up in the Northeast, in the New England area, it can be difficult to see that and think, is MLS Next Pro a possibility to take over this league? And based off of what I have seen, I would say no. I don't know how many really worry about this as much as I kind of did there for a while. Here's my take on it. The USL as a whole is, and of course MLS Next Pro, both at USL and MLS Next Pro, are designated professional leagues. The thing with USL is that the pay is immensely better. Of course, we've seen Albert Dequa, who just moved from Pittsburgh to Rhode Island in free agency, and he is undoubtedly, I should say, getting paid big money. Probably one of the top paid athletes in the league. I'm guessing somewhere close to six figures, if not a bit under, on the year, which would make him one of the highest, if not the highest paid USL championship player this year. And when you get to MLS Next Pro, that's just not the case. A lot of them are on developmental contracts. And a lot of the teams are developmentally based for nurturing talent for MLS teams. The only exceptions are going to be the Jacksonville side that joins soon. You have Huntsville City, or Huntsville SC, I should say, or Huntsville City SC, whatever. And then you got Connecticut United, who could also be some sort of subsidiary team of, say, DC United. DC United doesn't have a second team anymore now that they have disaffiliated with Loudoun United. So in that realm, USL is, or at least the USL Championship and USL League One will stay over MLS Next Pro for a long time. Unless MLS Next Pro becomes its own thing that gives opportunities to other cities, which I don't see happening because the market is going to be so small once, because USL is already taking over a lot of key areas and demographics that MLS Next Pro could jump into. USL is already hitting the Arkansas area. You know, it's got Iowa, it's got Wisconsin now. The only area that MLS Next Pro really has that the USL Championship doesn't have is Chattanooga. Chattanooga is a big area, but I'm not too worried about that because the USL League One has the Chattanooga Red Wolves, and they will be battling constantly between Chattanooga and MLS Next Pro. So I'm not too worried about where USL and specifically the USL Championship is heading with the news that MLS Next Pro is expanding into Connecticut. I'd be more worried if MLS Next Pro was more established and not as developmental as it already is and is going to continue to be. Because a lot of these teams, we've seen MLS teams only care about MLS. And when they had developmental teams in the USL Championship, they didn't really care about them as much as they really should have. We saw that with Loudoun United. We saw that with RGV. And New York Red Bulls, too, there were good there for a while, but not long enough to be sustainable. Atlanta United, too, never really picked it up. LA Galaxy, too, were all right there for a little bit, but we never saw any of those teams other than Red Bulls, too, really get off the ground running. And there were some teams in there that were bad. So they will care more about MLS Next Pro than, or they will, they still care about MLS Next Pro, but they will not care about it, of course, as much as MLS, the actual, you know, first division league. So again, not worried about it. USL has a bright future ahead of it. It's hitting so many areas. Also, Northern Arkansas, we've got Sporting Jacks coming. We've got Iowa, we've got Wisconsin in Milwaukee. It's going to be a lot of fun in these coming years when we see these teams and we have a league that is just so expansive and just covers a lot of ground. It's going to be great. It already is great. And of course, you cannot forget that hopefully sometime in the future, we have the Oklahoma City Energy coming back as well. That'd be great. Talking about teams that are, or talking about things, I guess, that are headed in the right direction. Las Vegas. We had seen recently that their previous owner had gone to a state official. I believe it was the governor of Nevada or the mayor of Las Vegas and had stated their intention to sell the team. And of course, now they sell it to baseball legend Jose Bautista. He acquires full ownership and control of the Las Vegas Lights. So what particularly does this mean for them going forward? For this season, I'm not sure because they are still following that rubric from last season where they are going to announce their signings in bulk. It seems they have not. They easily could have signed players right now and just not announced it, but it seems like that there has been no business on the playing side of the team throughout the whole offseason. I'm unaware of how large the staff is at Las Vegas, so that could also be an issue. They could be trying to expand their efforts in that regards. So staffing issues could be also an issue as to why things are getting out so slow. It was not a good situation. Cashman Field was very rarely filled, even on promotional nights, which is not great. But that should change, hopefully. This year, like I said, it's going to be a transitional year. This year is going to be difficult. I do not expect them to be competitive this year. With the high squad turnover, of course, they lost Lucas Stouffer, one of their best players last year. They lose. That is not what you want to see in terms of maintaining a squad. So I would personally say that it could be another 2 to 3 seasons before we see Las Vegas be any sort of competitor in this league. And I also think that comes down to, do they keep Isidro Martinez? Any manager who came in last year was going to have a difficult time in terms of getting a lot out of a pretty bare-bones team. We saw a lot of stars. Of course, one of those was Stouffer, who got his move to another team in the USL Championship. And will they give him time? Of course, this year will most likely be another not-so-great year. If they break that 25-point, 30-point mark, I'd be impressed. I would definitely be impressed. But it all just comes down to, do they see that as ineptitude on the coach's part, that he can't get the most, or he can't get a lot out of a little in terms of the roster? Or does it come down to, they realize that they still have a lot of work to do and Isidro Martinez is doing the best he can? Because I think Martinez did the best he could with the squad that he had last year. And they played some very close games. They had a lot of draws there for a while. They only got a handful of wins. But you give him some more time with his team. You let him recruit how he wants to recruit. You let him be involved in the recruiting process and signing players. This team could be good. Las Vegas is a huge market. And if you don't want it to get poached by MLS, you have to build. And it seems like Bautista coming in, acquiring full ownership, is a step in the right direction for Las Vegas and for the team in general. So I'm very excited for how Las Vegas are looking going forward. And that's what you want to see, really, is you want to see, instead of teams going under and owners being stingy in the case of like RGV, you want to see these sales or just transitions into new ownership groups, and you want to see them prosper. That is what makes a great league. The USL has been growing exponentially in the past couple of seasons. We have seen very little hiatuses or dissolving of clubs that haven't been due to like unfortunate circumstances. Like, you know, when you move into the new era in around like 2015, 2016, the USL Championship era, or around 2014, you get these moves that are undesirable. And then, you know, you're in this era of uncertainty, and then you hit COVID, where we lose Fresno, we lose Reno, Oklahoma goes on hiatus, then you lose San Diego after this past season, and you lose RGV. We've been lucky that the past couple of team losses have not necessarily just been because of like ineptitude on someone's part. Like San Diego felt a bit inevitable with San Diego going to MLS. That is, of course, understandable. It would have been nice to see them staying around. And of course, their stadium situation with Torero Stadium. Oklahoma City Energy, purely based off the stadium, not much they can do about that. Hopefully they will be back. And then RGV are in a very difficult area, and they could have done more to really reach out to the community, because Houston is a big community, and even the Houston Dynamo don't do a great job of getting out on a community level. So RGV could have done something there. There wasn't a lot of effort there, so that's unfortunate. But fortunately, looking on the bright side, RGV is the only real case of owners not doing enough in the last four-ish years in terms of keeping the team around. And it seems like we're moving in a direction where that is going to continue to decline, and teams are just getting into the community, putting good product on the field. You know, they're not bad for long. Hartford, really, and Loudoun are the only two that come to mind that haven't really had a great year, but Hartford still has great support. It seems like this year is going to be a great year for them. And of course, Loudoun, now with their disaffiliation with DC United, have really come into their own as a team. And Leesburg, Virginia is a very intriguing area to get into. It's right outside the DMV area where DC United are. They have the potential for big outreach. And I think they'll get more into that this year when a better product is on the field and people see a good team in Loudoun United for the first time ever and are like, you know, this is something that's different. And this is something I want to get into because it's a more community feel. You know, Segra Field is beautiful. Loudoun United as a club is very well run. So that will be something to look forward to as well this year. Another thing to look forward to, especially if you're a Phoenix fan, is how Danny Stone is going to do as your new head coach. Of course, we saw Juan Guerra leave, got poached by Houston Dynamo to fill that assistant manager's role that Brendan Burke filled and then left. So maybe that says a lot. Maybe Juan Guerra will leave after a season and come back to the league in a head coaching role somewhere else. But Juan Guerra does leave. Danny Stone is the new head coach. Joined Phoenix in 2021 as an assistant coach. Has a huge, has a very good resume, of course. Spent time in England with Blackburn Rovers in Notts County before spending time with the Colorado Rapids, and also has some USL experience with the Oklahoma City Energy. And that is, you cannot really ask for more in terms of coaching experience. He's been abroad and seen how it works over there. He's been with an MLS team. He's come down and he's also seen the coaching side in the USL Championship, not only with Oklahoma City, but also in the organization that he's taking over for. This is about as good as it gets. Of course, there are other managers that you could go after, but with managers coming in, that often changes the whole dynamic of the team who have not been around the team at all. It changes the environment and changes the culture. It can change the demeanor of the players and the morale of the players. So when you have someone like Danny Stone, who seems to be well-received by the Phoenix community and the Phoenix players, it's good. It's a good sign. Phoenix are a very well-run club, one of the best-run clubs in the USL as a whole. They are on top in terms of just pure structure of how their team is run. So for them this year, I think, again, you're looking at a possible repeat. You have someone familiar. You have a lot of returning players, which we will get to as well. So it's just a recipe for success.
I think it's time for a quick break. And we're back.
All right. So Danny Stone, of course, is in at Phoenix now, but he's also bringing back a big piece in Rocco Rios Novo. And another big goalkeeper coming in is Pablo Cisniega from Charlotte to San Antonio. These are two key goalkeepers being brought into the league. Of course, Rocco Rios Novo was one of the key pieces that got Phoenix to the final last year and was a big developmental part of their success. They get him back on loan from Lanús. So that will be a very interesting thing of how much of the team can they bring back. Of course, they lost Danny Trejo to a side in Poland. That will be huge. He was one of the best attacking pieces that they have last year. But Phoenix are bringing back a lot of their squad that they had last year. So I'm not really worried about them in that sense. But Rocco Rios Novo, like I said, a big piece that you want to have in your team. Still a very young goalkeeper. And you pile that on top of everything else that they've done. Another big piece that we have seen is Pape Marbois, a college defender, went very far with Clemson, won College Cup with Clemson, foregoes the MLS Super Draft, foregoes a Generation Adidas contract, which is damn near guaranteed money with an MLS franchise. Generation Adidas is not offered to many, as far as I know. So that is big. And he joins with Phoenix. That says a lot about Phoenix. That says a lot about the league as well. So that is another big pickup. I would say like a foundational pickup. He is a defender that you really rely on and you really build your team around. So you already have a foundational piece at goalkeeper coming back in Rocco Rios Novo, who, you know, likely stays a while, and now Pape and Marbois, and another developmental piece, another foundational piece in Julio Dorotioto coming in from Juve Next Gen, a big defensive midfield piece, because, you know, you have a couple older players, I should say. They have really, Phoenix, I should say, have really gone younger, it feels like, and have been very smart in terms of how they are approaching specifically not just their future for 2024, but their future in general. And they also go for Isaac Kakush, a young center back from the Barca Academy. So they are, so far, I mean, just looking at it here, only two players over 25 or over 26, I should say, John Skiers from Union Omaha is 25 years old. They've got Edgardo Rito coming in from Hartford, 27 years old, and then Juan Carlos Azucar coming back at 28 years old. And of course, they do have some pieces that they've lost as well. They've lost Manuel Arteaga to the Tampa Bay Rowdies. They did bring back Mohamed Traore as well. That's a big piece. Great right back piece to have, or a great fullback piece in general to have. Very versatile he is. But you also lose Danny Trejo. So you lose two key attacking pieces in Danny Trejo and Manuel Arteaga, but you really shore up the defensive side, and that might speak more to what Danny Stone wants to do. It might be a more defensive team. They've gone younger up top. So we'll see how that plays out for them. So on the Phoenix track, we have been going for a while. We'll talk about Cisniega, who I brought up as well. A lot of MLS experience. He has played both with Charlotte FC and LAFC. So he has seen both sides, really, of success in the league. And that is something that you want from a player of that caliber. He's going to come in. He'll probably slot right in to the starting goalkeeper spot. Of course, Nick Marsman does not come back. He had a very difficult time last year. So Cisniega will be a, hopefully, foundational piece. You never know with how things will go with these MLS players who come down. They could find it a lot more difficult to play down here. You know, Marsman was fine in MLS in his time with Miami. He comes down, he struggled. He was not good. So you would hope for more from Cisniega. Made a lot of appearances. Pretty solid. You also have Lucho Siliniak leaving El Paso for San Antonio, joining a Copa Tejas rival is pretty remarkable. And you also have Juan Agudelo. You get a big piece, a big center forward piece who was able to hit around 8 or 9 goals, it felt, per season with the Birmingham Legion. Big forward, really a target forward. And that is what San Antonio play with when they had, you know, Justin Dillon, when they had Sam Adeniran. Nathan Gacha played a bit there for a while, but San Antonio's losses also hit pretty hard. They lose Lamar Batista. They lose Ja'Cory Hayes, both in North Carolina FC. Justin Dillon goes the other way. You know, you have Lucho Selinyak joining San Antonio. Justin Dillon goes to El Paso. Connor Maloney retires. A lot of losses on the side. The biggest loss, Tanny Oluwaseyi. That is a piece that they are going to have to replace. Like for like, if they want the same amount of production that they got last year. So, Rios Novo, Cisniega. I know I'm kind of going off on other players, but those are two. I have really like five big transfers here, and then we can jump into a couple more pieces that really stand out. Chris Gloucester, I think, heading into New Mexico United. New Mexico is in a very unique position in that Eric Quill did decide to stay, which is huge. And now a lot of the foundational pieces that have been with New Mexico for so long are retiring or moving on to different clubs. And now you get a lot of younger options coming in. And one of those is Chris Gloucester. He is a U.S. youth national team left back, spent some time with New York City FC. And now he comes down to New Mexico. And for New Mexico, who has been, it feels like, in this period of they've been good, of course, in the past couple of years. But they have been reliant on players who have been there for a while and who have been aging. And now they are moving into their own, it feels, a new era, I should say. We can go through the list of players who have come in and really, it looks like, rejuvenized the squad or rejuvenated this team. You got Chris Gloucester, of course, 23 years old, joins from the MLS pool. Mukwele Akali, who had a great year with Tormenta, or the South Georgia Tormenta in USL League One. Marco Micheletto, who I personally have seen live play for Columbus Crew 2. I think it is one of the best pickups they could have made for that midfield. Avion Flanagan, who has struggled and it jumped from team to team. This could be his destination, I'm not too sure. Deion Harris, who leaves the Tampa Bay Rowdies for some more playtime. Josh Doling and Timothy Azali from Las Vegas. Or, of course, they come back from their loans from Las Vegas. And the big one for me is Abu Dunladi. He has that MLS experience. He has not had a breakout year yet where he has hit more than about 11 or 12 goals, I want to say. This is his opportunity. Abu Dunladi is the biggest pickup, and it's the biggest risk pickup, I would have to say, because they are no doubt paying him a lot of money. He was bouncing around in MLS for a while, and you still get paid a lot to bounce around in MLS. You still get those $100,000, $200,000 deals against the salary cap, and New Mexico will have to pay him something close to that for his services. So this is not a light deal. They are counting on him a lot to be that main man up top. And it will be difficult it'll be interesting to see how that works out now that they are without other pieces like specifically Amando Moreno, who was with them for so long and now heads to El Paso. So you lose pieces like that and you try to make it up. At the very least, New Mexico will have a interesting year with the signings that we have seen them make so far. Another one that we'll go with is Marlon Hairston, who joins Hartford Athletic. And it's just another big pickup in Hartford's long, long offseason. In which they have tried to make up ground that they have lost for, it feels like, so long. They have been, the only season that we've seen them be competitive really was 2020. And now with Brendan Burke, with a new breath of fresh air, in the front office. I mean, we're looking at around like 10-ish, 15 arrivals. Among the biggest, you've got Romario Williams, a key striker, absolutely. You've got Enos Musugalusa, who at only 24, it feels like he has done a lot, but also not done enough. He's kind of in this weird limbo. Like, he had a good first showing with Louisville, but now, you know, after leaving Sporting Kansas City 2, now, though, got loaned out to San Diego, didn't do much, has an opportunity here with Hartford. You got Jay Chapman, you've got Marlon Hairston, of course. And Marlon Hairston, they have him listed here as a right winger. I don't necessarily see that. I see him more as a defensive mid option. He, of course, left the Columbus Crew after the 2021 season, hasn't played professional football since then, and gets an opportunity here. And you also have players like Reese Busmaker, Joe Farrell, who leaves Pittsburgh. There is a clear sign of intent, and there's a clear vision that has all of these players on board. So that is what you get, and you are seeing it live with Hartford having an offseason like this. They also lose some important pieces. They lose Joe Rice, who for his sake was not bad. He was put in a lot of bad positions by Hartford. And he goes to the switchbacks, and with Herrera coming back, I don't know if he'll be number one, but he will be a good backup piece at the least. And I could see Herrera and Rice splitting time, to be honest, because those are two quality goalkeepers who should be starters in this league. The other big loss, I'm not going to go Elvis Amo. He didn't really live up to what they wanted. I'm going to go Connor McGlynn. A piece that you develop like that, you want him to stay for a while. And you lose him to a New England rival in Rhode Island in their first season. That's a difficult loss for sure. And you also lose Prince Sadie. They have taken some hard losses, more so, I would say, personal losses, especially on the Connor McGlynn side. But I think they have, at the very least, made up for it with how they have treated this transfer window. And the last one, the last transfer I have on here is, of course, Albert Dikwa to Rhode Island from Pittsburgh. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but we're going to go through and just talk about some more transfers that I see here that really stand out. You, of course, have Jake Morris, who joins Louisville City FC. That is huge. Never really got the time with the Columbus Crew first team. And he'll be a good piece, a very attack-oriented left back. And if Louisville still stick with that three at the back formation, like I expect Danny Cruz to do, then he will thrive. Same with Sam Gliedel, both the same kind of players. They get Tola Shuimi as well, a very young option. And I will have to say, very surprised that he would leave Pittsburgh, because Pittsburgh still have Bob Lilly. We've talked a lot about him on this podcast on will he retire, will he not. Doesn't seem like it. It seems like he's got one more year at least. And either there's some sort of rift going on Pittsburgh, which I don't think is true. I'm not trying to say that there is, but Pittsburgh have lost a lot of good pieces. And I know the turnover rate here in this league is high, but you'd expect after a season like that, even though they got bounced in the first round of the playoffs, and that might be a bit of a downer, Lilly is capable of getting very far. And they also lose, or they also gain Arturo Ordonez from Pittsburgh. They also get Taylor Davila from RGFC, from Rio Grande, I should say, Rio Grande FC. And again, it's just Louisville, it seems like, have rounded out a lot of their positions that they have wanted to round out. They've got central midfield with Taylor Davila, who is only 23 years old and has already seen a lot of playing time and a lot of personal success with RGV. So that's huge. Moving on here, you have, of course, Justin Dillon going to El Paso. You have Lucas Stoffer at 28 years old, you know, gets his first really good year with Las Vegas. You also have Jamali Waite leaving Pittsburgh for El Paso and Tumi Moshabani. So it feels like El Paso under Brian Clarhout now really starting to build a feasible and good team that hopefully will not struggle as much as they have in the past two seasons in terms of keeping up consistency of winning games. Those are the ones that really come to mind. Of course, I will be remiss to forget a lot of important ones. It's been a long time, but transfers and coverage of transfers and talk on that, of course, will be more formal and collected when there's not as many to go over as there have been for the past 3 or 4 weeks. Now that we're in that period of, you know, teams really starting to build their squads out so that they don't have to worry about preseason being, you know, a struggle. You want all your players to gel before or at the beginning of preseason. If you integrate a lot of players during preseason, you're just asking for trouble. So to finish off today, we are going to look over Rhode Island. Of course, they are the one inaugural team that we have this season. Gosh, for some reason, I don't know. I just got a little worried there that I forgot a team. No, Rhode Island are the only team, inaugural team, joining for the first year this year. For some reason, I was thinking of North Carolina. Like, is this their first year? No, of course not. They come back up. But for Rhode Island, they came out swinging. And that is what you need to do in this league. Time and time again, it feels like we have seen teams go the conservative route and think that they can get away with not investing that much from the beginning. And that is how you build a recipe to be mediocre for your first 4 or 5 seasons. Rhode Island, though, have gone against that and have, like I said, come out swinging. We'll look at some of the key foundational pieces here. You got Koke Vegas, an absolute leader in goal. That is a big pickup from San Diego. I'm just thinking here. A plethora of experience in Spain. A lot of time with San Diego, like I said. A lot of experience with this league. Knows what it takes to be successful. Has made the playoffs, I believe, every year that he has been with San Diego. So, again, knows what it takes. And a distribution-oriented goalkeeper. That is something that helps out teams immensely in this league. And Kano obviously knows what he wants from his goalkeeper. He knows what he wants from his team. I'm expecting a very pass-heavy and build-up play-oriented team here, which goes against the grain for a lot of teams in this league. Obviously, a lot of teams are very hot on the press or love that low block, love to play the long balls behind. Rhode Island, it seems like, are going to stand out a lot in this first season. Another player that stands out, Stephen Turnbull, joined from New York City FC. Someone familiar with the New England area, with this Northeast area. He is going to be big. It's going to be his first year stepping down from MLS into the USL Championship. So I'm excited to see how that works out for him. You've also got Noah Fusan and Clay Holstad joining from MLS Next Pro's Columbus Crew 2. Noah Fusan has been electric for Columbus Crew 2 his whole career. Clay Holstad only recently joined the Columbus Crew 2 setup. I believe he only had a season there. Leaves now, played well enough, gets an opportunity here with Rhode Island in that central midfield. And one of the best things about this Rhode Island team is while they're not done yet, they still have a lot of positions to fill. They are already, it feels like, 2 to 3 deep in every position. They already have a lot of fullbacks. They already have a lot of defenders that they can count on. And center forward might be their deepest option, and that's where we're going to finish here. But we'll go through a little bit more. We got Connor McGlynn, We talked about him. You got Grant Stoneman. You got Mark Doyle coming in from St. Pat's. You've got that European experience. You got Jose Aquizeri. You got Prince Sadie. You got Mark Ibarra. These are players who are familiar with the USL Championship. And then you got Mark Doyle. You have a bit of European experience. You have a bit of European flair to bring in. Because if you just go that route of USL Championship, you're probably going to get stuck. You'll do well if you build the team well enough, but you'll struggle to really have that extra step that a player like Mark Doyle may be able to bring in. And they've also done well to go after other pieces from the developmental MLS Next Pro, bringing in players from the MLS pool or free agency from MLS in Stephen Turnbull, in Jackson Lee, who was selected by LAFC from the draft, doesn't sign with LAFC, comes down to Rhode Island, knows he'll get that opportunity. Same thing with Quisera, comes down from Montreal, gives an gets another shot here. Played with Montreal for a bit, didn't do the best, and you know, is able to come down here and hopefully on Rhode Island's part be an integral part. And we'll finish here with the biggest position that Rhode Island has filled so far this season. It is center forward. I talked about Fuson, but you've also got JJ Williams, who hit double-digit goals last year and has been that dual threat center forward that is so sought after in this league. He can score goals, but he can also assist. He is fantastic on the ball. And one of the most impressive things from JJ Williams that we have seen in this league before, I'll compare him to Sam Adeniran, it is that power shot that JJ Williams has. That will bring a lot of worth to Rhode Island and complements a lot. I was trying to think of a more appropriate word, but complements perfectly, I should say. Albert Dikwa, who is more of a poacher in the box, was the top goal scorer for Pittsburgh last year. We know how lethal he is. So when you see a center forward core of Noah Fuson, who could be a starter, although I highly doubt it, with Dikwa and Williams in front of him, it's built for success. And you have got them in their primes or close to their primes with Fuson at 24. Williams at 25, and Dikwa at 26. I always see Dikwa's names. I want to say Dikwa, but I know it's Dikwa. I always do that. So you know that their center forward core, it's built for now and it's built for the future, which is one of the biggest holes that they filled early on. And you knew that seeing these kinds of moves, you knew that Rhode Island were already shooting for success in the first season, which it feels like a lot of teams kind of just go conservative and think, you know, oh, we'll have a passive first season and then really start to build on it after the or into the second or third seasons. And that's where you get teams that settle for mediocrity. So it looks like Rhode Island are not going to do that this season. So that really is where we have been for the league in the past 2 to 3-ish weeks. We'll see where it keeps taking us. We still have about 2 months before the season starts, so we've got some time. A lot of things will change. I don't think Rhode Island situation will change. I think they'll still be considered a top dog, but there is room for every team to fluctuate in terms of how good or how bad we think they may do. I'm excited for that. There's going to be a lot of different content as well coming out in the next couple of weeks. I hinted at that at the top of the episode. So very exciting to jump into other areas than just discussions about the league. We'll go into more, of course, like I said, player-based, coach-based content, as well as other content that I have been trying to create as well. So looking forward to that. Thank you guys for listening to the first episode of the new USL Wade podcast. With that being said, I mean, like, I can't thank you guys enough for where this podcast has taken me and the support you guys have given me. It's been so much fun, and it's just going to get better from here. So thank you guys for listening today, and I will see you guys next Tuesday morning for the next scheduled episode of the USL Way. How awesome is that?